And now, Icon Art Radio.
It's Icon Art Radio with me, Bill Teeple, and Alan Cobb, and Donna Colby. Okay, Donna, set the theme.
Well, the theme arose from last week's show, something Alan said about an artist entering a world that every artist, when you hear this world described, you know what it feels like. But I want to kind of just see if we can talk about it. This may be another one of those slippery topics that is hard to express. But when an artist really enters, it's like the zone, when a runner talks about the zone, and there's a certain creative galaxy or whatever it is that we enter when creativity is flowing through us, being expressed by us. So let's
prerequisite is what we established last week. Once you can get through all that stuff that gets in the way and you have surrendered, then you find yourself in this creative place. All that other stuff is you know, the doubts and the it has to have a reason, all this stuff, and the thinking too much, that we have, if we can get to a point that we've allowed all of that to disappear, then we're in that place. Then we're actually creating. We're actually moving and doing it. And I think everyone who has functioned in that place, which I think we might call the zone, knows what it is. Mm-hmm. It drives some people crazy in that they have that, it sort of comes and goes sort of like arbitrarily for them, and they don't have, seem to not be able to get themselves in that place, and so they long for it, or they pine for it, or they desperately try to bring it back, and which only pushes it away. But you almost can do no wrong once you're there, and you're watching yourself do it, and your hand is making strokes and moves, and truly, I don't think you can make a wrong. Once you've gotten into that place and you're working there, you can't make a wrong move. Everything makes sense. Even if the doubts flow through, they make sense. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. Somebody else say something.
And you don't lose energy either.
It's a generating
state, even if it's like
an energy generating place.
You lose track of time, and the work itself produces more and more, not only more and more physical energy, but more and more creative energy as well, just blossoming in unexpected
I think
ways.
What happens with me is that the process of being creative, doing something that we would loosely call creative, like building something or writing something or photographing something, that process invites my attention, and then I have that constant choice of whether or not to prefer the action or the dialogue. And because the action is enticing, it makes it easy to prefer to avoid, to skip the dialogue. It's not that you consciously try not to think about what you're doing. Obviously, you have to have some thoughts about what you're doing. But in the process of the doing, you make a choice to prefer doing over thinking about doing. Mm-hmm. And only the thoughts that are engaged in the actual doing are relevant, and the non-relevant thoughts, maybe they present themselves to the awareness, but they're not invited in. There's no need for them to be pursued. And to me, that's the key to everything. It's that microscopic choice that you make in the domain of about 1 millisecond to entertain or not to entertain some virtual thought that has presented itself at the front door. And I learned this originally when my wife passed away, and I felt grief whenever I thought about her. And I thought, this is terrible. In fact, I was feeling grief before she passed away. And that seemed like a real cheat, because here I should be enjoying my time and with her, and instead I'm living in the future and some bleak, you know, situation. And I realized that when a thought came about something horrible, I was aware of it before I was actually thinking it. And I had a moment of free will in that tiny section of time to take the thought or not. And I thought, well, why take a thought like that? And, you know, everybody's experienced it, and we do it on a fairly obvious level by saying, well, I'm not going to go there. Some thought comes, and you have a choice to dwell on it or not. And I think when you refine that down into the moment, that's really what the artist is doing. He's taking a path that makes it almost guaranteed that he'll stay in the moment and not have to spend a lot of wasted time thinking about thinking.
And those thoughts may tap on your little door frequently during your session in the studio, and you have to make that millisecond choice more than once.
Oh, yes, maybe it keeps 10, coming, 20,000 times.
but the more you make that choice, I think the less frequently those inner interruptions barge in. Do you have that?
Yes, I wouldn't say it makes them come less frequently, but it certainly makes them, it becomes a habit to just ignore them, to just pursue them.
I'm going to take another angle here just to make it more interesting. I mean, it is already interesting, but just give it a little spice. What about the talented person? Because this has come up in my mind in the last days. I've been thinking, you know, it's nice for us all to be creative together and discuss the how wonderful it is to all be artists together and doing this wonderful thing and having these experiences ourselves. But you can't deny that there's these few individuals who, just by their presence among us, do these things that are just amazing and delightful and, like we think, perfect. And they're just being themselves. And it's obvious that this person came in with what we're calling talent. They can do this thing. Now, is it that they're accomplished? Is their talent more that they're accomplished at this thing that we're describing? Or are they just virtuosos? Yeah, they came into the world as virtuosos. And I'm thinking that what makes Miles Davis someone who stands above the rest in many ways in the jazz world, not that he can play the trumpet better than everyone else, but he does this stuff that we're describing so well. And is there's this freedom that these people have either learned over many lifetimes or just have naturally, where they don't get in their own way, and they're not afraid to explore in the context of their instrument, whether it's their body. Like Rudolf Nureyev did not have the body for dancing. And yet what he did with that body was more than any other dancer in the century, probably.
And even somebody like Judy Garland, for example, who had this exquisite voice, even from, you know, you hear recordings of her when she was 14 and it just like knocks you out. She even resisted her talent because there were a lot of complications and the industry owning her and all of that. It caused a lot of pain. But yet at the same time, she had no choice really but to play that role in her life, because her voice itself, that just came through her vessel, the vessel of her body, made people cry and their jaws dropped.
But I would have to say that it wasn't the voice, the great vocal chords, as much as just the way she did each phrase and the feeling in it. And her just the, she like put herself so deeply into it on an emotional level, mm-hmm. like with no fear. I mean, when she wasn't singing, or all of the stuff that collected around these acts, that was what she had trouble dealing with. Mm-hmm. But when someone like her is like singing a line or singing a song, there's just like so much like direct expression of almost an archetypal being coming through that person.
So maybe part of the juggling act that, because I know in her case, for example, she would talk about when she was out on the stage singing to the people, she felt this complete intimacy with every single person in the audience, and her heart was just like embracing all of them. They were all embracing her. And she absolutely hated the show to end, because then she would go to her dressing room and have to enter this other part of life. And so for any artist who's able or finds himself in this world that we've just been describing and where it's timeless and all that, there's some points where you have to come out of that world and deal with other aspects of life. Maybe their social obligations or family obligations or just the need to eat some food or whatever. So how does that work in the life of an artist, that juggling act that we have to manage?
Well, first of all, I think that these people that we think of as this type of person are good at clicking into that place and functioning there in front of us. Mm-hmm. I think what a lot of us do, this thing we were describing last week, is like, we can't click in, we can't separate the two things, and so it's all mixed and it's obvious in the work. Mm. I think that the goal in life would be to be that, to be able to click into that place forever and function there. I think this is integration, and this is a state of enlightenment, really.
Mm. She's really making a good example of living for a while on stage in the present, and then going back to her dressing room and diving back into the past and the future. Mm-hmm. And perhaps some understanding of that can help you. I don't know. I mean, whenever I hear a story of someone like that, I think, oh, gee, if only I could have gone and talked to them and told them, you know, all you need to know is that you're just dwelling on the past and the future, mm-hmm. and you don't need to do that. But of course, it doesn't work that way. People are telling us better ways of handling ourselves, and we don't use those better ways. But there's a process of becoming accustomed to that transition and learning sort of where the door is, I guess, and how to turn the knob. And it's not too surprising that with beings as complicated as humans who have to be taught how to walk, that we would also have to be taught, perhaps through a lifetime of living, how to do some of these other basic things that aren't self-evident. As soon as you give us this capacity to think about what we're doing, then suddenly we have the capacity to get completely screwed up and lose track of what we're doing entirely. Mm. And if you spend too much time thinking about it, then you may have wonderful thoughts, maybe you'll gain some insight, but I think certainly by this time in my life, I've had to come to the conclusion that the insights don't really come from thinking about it. It's the other direction. I have the insights and then I think about them.
Now, do you think it's possible, because I'm starting to feel like at this stage in my life, I'm 60 years old, my children are grown, and I'm entering into kind of a greater freedom in my life, and I'm finding it to be more of the case that I stay in that world that used to be a part of just my refuge of my art room. You know, I'm finding myself staying in that world more and more, in just even during mundane activities. And so how do you feel about that? I mean, to me, that's just the most delightful way to live life, if we can be in that kind of a zone, no matter what we're doing.
I have to drag myself kicking and screaming out of that zone to accomplish the ordinary activities of daily life.
But do you think we have
life?
To come out of it? Don't you think we can accomplish the ordinary things?
Yes, I
if
know.
If we're
I know that I should be
the ability
able
to.
I'm convinced that I should be able to, but well, it's there are certain kinds of activities I just can't. I can't surrender to. I mean, if it's time to go to the doctor, I'll worry about it for a week before I go. But if I'm about to do some strange construction and I don't know how it's going to work and I'm afraid it'll be, you know, a dismal failure until I have done it seven different ways and found just the right material, that doesn't bother me. You know, I say I'm afraid it won't. I just mean that figuratively. I'm not actually afraid at all. I'm enjoying the fact that I don't know how it's going to work, and I don't know what I'm going to do to make it work. And as it evolves, I'll find out. And I think that for me, that's perhaps it's just wishful thinking, but that's the model for how I think I'm supposed to live. How
well, it's a
life
creative
is supposed
process.
To work.
It's like even the challenging things are still engaging your creative mechanism, whereas going to the doctor is a different, you know, unless you, maybe you could figure out some way to make that a creative
It's a
process,
challenge to my creative skills. It's just too more of a challenge than I understand how to deal with.
Well, this,
you know, and taxes. I mean, there's a whole bunch of things that are just sufficiently annoying and or threatening or intimidating that I don't really have a creative way of interacting with them.
Except for to practice in however we get a handle on it, the thing of being in the present.
Yes,
and not
absolutely.
Having our attention totally consumed by the past or the future. And I think absolutely. That artists in general, people who really are artists all day long, stay in this place all day long, and they do have trouble coming out of that place to do the mundane things like going actually to the landlord and paying the rent.
It's funny though, you know, that we use the word mundane and describing some of these things, and yet I was thinking about some friends of mine who are farmers, and their lives are filled with creative problem solving from morning till dusk. On the surface, they're doing the same things all the time. But it's not routine. It's not even close to routine. It's one of the most non-routine professions a person could have.
It's like being a mother. It's the same.
Like being a mother.
Yeah. I would say that gardening and agriculture and mothering are areas where the person is very much in present time.
Yeah, you're
dealing
constantly
with
dealing with
the
reality.
Stuff that is part of this process, this natural
and pure
process.
Pure creativity, you know, you're nurturing
and,
some growing things.
Or today the tractor doesn't start, and tomorrow it does, but the grain elevator needs oiling, and you haven't been up there in 3 years. And
well, and we can extend this to pretty much probably every example of something in life, you know, cleaning your bathroom. Right. If you phrase it in, there's probably a way to look at everything creatively. Even doing your taxes, you know, possibly.
Well, in many cases, freeing a person from these affairs often puts him in the place where he can just become completely convoluted and locked up and paralyzed and unable to act because of all of the thinking about in the past. And you can get stuck. You can really spend a lot of time getting stuck in the past or the future, getting all tied up in knots if you don't have to deal with the natural things that people have to do.
Yeah. Rhythms of life, too. Yeah.
Yeah. If you're in a situation or if you create for yourself a situation that continually pulls you back into activity, and that's sort of what at least my approach to art seems to do, because I'm constantly I'm constantly sort of throwing myself into situations where I have to learn something new. And I love to learn something new. I just can't get enough of it. And in the process of learning, there's this tremendous urge to express what I've learned, sort of almost as an offering to the thing that I just learned. And there's no greater satisfaction than to learn something and then explain it to someone who is interested. Of course, if they're not interested, it's painful for everyone.
But see, this circles back to the topic we started with last week about obligation. The word that I used then was obligation. And I think it's, life has built into it a kind of healthy obligation from what you were just talking about, both of you, where you're in this zone, you're in this kind of solitary zone with your creativity, and then there's certain aspects of life that just bring us out into, it creates a balance to have a lunch appointment with somebody, or to have a child to take care of, or to have to do your taxes and see where your financial state, you know, happens to be right then or whatever. And so they are, in a sense, obligations, but the problem comes when one or the other side becomes too weighty.
And yeah, and you know, something you said early on about the zone, in a sense, when I brought that up last week, I wasn't really thinking about this timeless space. Mm. I was just thinking that when you come right down to it, as soon as you have a plan and take one step in that direction, you are stepping into another universe. Mm. Like it or not, in the zone or out of the zone, it's a different place because you've taken a step and all of the rules are microscopically adjusted, and maybe a few of the factors you're dealing with are significantly altered. After you've taken 10 steps, you may have to turn left or you'll hit the wall. And so it's kind of like the Zen notion that, you know, you can't step into the same river twice. And I guess I'm really just saying that. But knowing that that's what's happening means that the methodology, the method of walking, the art of walking is not simply falling forward one foot onto one foot and then the other. It's you fall forward and then you just inevitably have to kind of reorient and reassess your direction. And that's happening whether you choose to do it or not. The situation has changed. You're 3 feet further down the road now and maybe there's a curb. So it's this process of taking a direction, which is free will, but then as soon as you actually take the direction, you have to surrender to the new circumstances.
And the more adept you are, this goes back to what you were talking about with Miles Davis and people like that, when you're a baby learning how to walk or to speak, there's much more conscious effort required each step you're taking. When you're Miles Davis, possibly the difference that makes somebody that high, at that high degree of talent, is that all that's required is the first little mini step, and then it's just effortless, and just each next step easily flows out.
If the physiology has been developed to fulfill that kind of direction, either through, you know, years and years of dedicated practice, mm. Or through the great good fortune of genetics, or however it happens to be, or your past, then when you do that, when you take that step, turn in that direction, give that direction to time, then there's a huge open channel for it to happen in. If it's something you've never done before, then you may fall down while you're doing it. Mm. But the process was the same thing. Yeah. So we're fortunate to be in the company of the Coltranes and Davises of the world. But who knows, you know, what kind of preparation went into that facility that they have now, and who knows what areas of subtle, you know, boundary breaking they're engaged in inside when they play the thing that we see as utterly magnificent and perfect. They may see that, missed that one, close, mm-hmm. have to try that again next time. And it might not be, you know, mind-bending for them at all. I mean, presumably it probably isn't. It may be delightful that they're going with the flow, but I'm sure they're still, you know, reaching for something even higher, and probably having an experience somewhat like the one that we have.
Exactly, and I think that they've just got a more kind of like more momentum and mm-hmm. abilities and an open channel to explore. And a lot of times that's why one of these people can really take us somewhere, because yeah. they've got a real thing going.
That's and something extra than just practicing a lot too, because there could be
absolutely.
Many people who have start playing a musical instrument and practice as many hours a day as somebody like Miles Davis, but they're never going to be a Miles Davis, because they may be a virtuoso technically, but there's something magical that certain people seem to have that.
But it's accomplishment in this thing we've been discussing
yeah.
both today and last week that I think is the thing.
And the, you know, the inferior to Miles Davis, highly technically accomplished trumpet player, is still doing something mm-hmm. marvelous.
Mm-hmm.
I think a wonderful comparison would be Al Hurt, who is technically probably way, way, way superior to Miles Davis, and whose art form, for whatever reason, was sort of pop Dixieland. And it didn't have that, you know, soul-slicing, insightful depth of Miles Davis's work, but it was called pyrotechnic trumpet playing and, you know, virtuosity and mm-hmm. things like that. But it was still quite memorable. And it's almost like, you know, the decorations of a you know, grand Gothic cathedral
mm-hmm.
from a pure design standpoint, in many cases, you know, those that kind of stonework is scroll work. It's you do it, you know, with French curves, and once you've defined it, you just execute it, and it takes forever. But it's once again, it's the person doing it that's mm-hmm. making all the difference.
Yeah, the anonymous artists of places like the Alhambra, for example, you don't know who created those things, and they were just. You can't even understand them, they're so marvelous.
You've been listening to Icon Art Radio. Production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.